Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancashire co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So, Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
All right, thanks. What is it, like 2 or 3 days after the championship finished for the week? We'll obviously talk about it in more depth, but Lanc's got a good win, which is good. Second in the league on bonus points, which is kind of irrelevant. Because we're still going through as it stands, but it was a good win for Lancs.
Yeah, very, very good win for Lancs, and of course we'll be touching upon that more as the podcast itself progresses. And in terms of today's show then, this is our second of the 2021 County Championship wrap-up shows. So before we get into the talking points, the in-depth analysis for today's show, let's go through the results. So we'll start with Group 1. Essex beat Durham by 44 runs down at Chelmsford. Derbyshire and Worcestershire played out a thrilling draw. It has to be said, we'll touch upon that in more detail, but that was a brilliant draw in Derby. And finally, the mighty Warwickshire got their first win in 577 days after beating Nottinghamshire by 3 wickets at Trent Bridge. Now, moving swiftly on, let's go on to Group 2. Some very, very interesting results in Group 2. And we'll start down in Taunton because Gloucestershire won the first side of Derby of the season by 8 wickets, hammering their West Country rivals down at the Cooper Associates County Ground. Then we move to Hampshire versus Middlesex. Hampshire hammered the Saxes by 249 runs at the Aegeus Bowl. And last but by no means least, Surrey and Leicestershire played out an entertaining draw down at the Oval. Now finally, moving on to Group 3, Joe, Lancashire's group of course. The Red Rose did beat North Ants by 206 runs at Emirates Old Trafford to get their first win of the season. Yorkshire beat Kent by 200 runs down in Canterbury. And finally, Sussex getting their first win of the season as well after smashing Glamorgan by 8 wickets at Sophia Gardens. So before we go on to the talking points and the analysis of this week's games then, let's just have a quick look at the tables. Now, fair enough, it's very, very early season. We are only 2 games into the 2021 Championship. But we'll start with Group 1. And ahead of me right here, looking at me in the face, is one of the most beautiful sights I can ever behold a Warwickshire fan, because Warwickshire are top of Group 1. Ahead of Essex in second, Derbyshire third, Worcestershire fourth, Durham fifth, and Nottinghamshire are currently sixth. Now moving on to Group 2, no surprises here. Hampshire, after a fantastic start to the season, are currently first. Gloucestershire as well, who have been incredibly impressive so far in their first 2 games, are currently sitting in second. Third are Surrey, fourth are Somerset, fifth are Leicestershire, and finally sixth are Middlesex. Now moving on to Group 3, again, a bit of a surprise. Heading into this season, we spoke with Sussex's analyst Luke Dunning about Red Bull cricket, the fact that they're willing to put up a real fight. And so far, the Martlets have done exactly that. They are currently top of Group 3, with Joe's County of Lancashire sitting in second, Lancashire's eternal rivals, Yorkshire currently in third, Kent are fourth, North Ants are fifth, and finally Glamorgan are sixth. So it has been a fascinating start to the 2021 County Championship, to say the least. And Joe, let's start today's analysis then, and let's go straight to Group 1. And we'll start down at Chelmsford for what was an incredible game between Essex and Durham. Now, for those who don't know, who didn't watch this game had it all. It was a non-stop rollercoaster of emotions, whether you're an Essex fan or a Durham fan. And it started so, so poorly for Essex. Really, really poorly. Steamrolled for 96 runs in their first innings as a result of some truly magnificent seam bowling, courtesy of Chris Rushworth, Matt Salisbury, Bryden Carson, Ben Rain, who took all 10 wickets between themselves. Then Durham went to 98 for 1. Scott Borthwick and Will Young, the Kiwi, on a debut for Durham, looking really, really impressive. But then, guess who turned up? Joe, who do you think turned up for Essex yet again?
Pretty obvious, isn't it? Simon Harmer.
Yep, Simon Harmer. Yeah, 100%, 5 for 79. Durham were ultimately restricted to 259 all out. Then in reply to this, Essex were struggling. They slipped to 208 for 7, only to be saved by a 58-run stand between Paul Walter and Ben Allison, and then another 53-run stand between Allison and Sam Cook, a former guest here on TCCP. It was an incredible game, and as if this game did not provide us with enough excitement, enough drama, Durham were 83 for 3. Borthwick and Burnham were playing it like trench warfare. They were entrenching themselves, like their lives depending on it. And then Harmer showed up once again, sparked a collapse, and Durham were ultimately bowled out for 123 runs in 56.4 overs. So a pretty extraordinary game, to say the least. down in Chelmsford. But Joe, before we talk about individual performances, what did you make of the game itself?
To be honest, I think Durham will be really disappointed. I mean, to bowl Essex out for 96, I think Durham will be really disappointed to not have at least got a draw from that game. To be honest, looking at it on day one, I think everybody would have thought Durham would have walked to that game over in, 3 days, maybe 2 days. But as it happened, fair play to Essex, they fought back. Durham, in my opinion, should have won that.
I think a lot of Durham fans would agree. And in terms of the batting, I think that was the disappointing aspect, because you've got the defending champions on the rope. As I mentioned, Durham's seam attack were absolutely relentless throughout this game. They were not giving up an inch to the Essex batsmen in that first innings. I've already mentioned Rushworth, Carr, Salisbury and Ben Rain. Absolutely fantastic. But unfortunately, the middle order just didn't come to the party in this particular game. And although they did have some fantastic individual performances, I already mentioned Scott Borthwick scored a brilliant ton in the first innings, Jack Burnham as well in the second innings with a really valiant 43. But the fact is, there just wasn't a massive partnership. That was what was the issue for Durham. They were not consistent partnerships. They had that brilliant partnership between Young and Borthwick in the first innings, and then the Jenga Tower just began to collapse, unfortunately, and they just couldn't wrestle back the momentum from a resurgent Essex side. And let's talk about Essex, Joe, because this is such an impressive comeback victory. It really is. This cannot be understated. After a terrible, terrible first day, and as you've said, a lot of teams, a lot of players, a lot of people, fans around the country would have been expecting Essex to be steamrolled after that, being bowled out for 96. To come back with the likes of Simon Harmer, Sam Cook as well, Ben Allison with both ball and bat, what do you make of this performance from an Essex perspective? And just how big of a morale boost will this be for the Southeastern team?
I mean, it's obviously good because, as I said, they're the defending champions. They've got two titles on the line that they want to defend. And the first game we talked about last week, they'd probably be pretty disappointed. That they didn't come away with a win from that game. So, yeah, I mean, to fight back from 96, was 96 all out? Yeah, to fight back from that. And then obviously to come back and win the game by, in reality, it's quite close. 44 runs is not the biggest win margin, really. In reality, it was quite close. So, to fight back and win that game is obviously massive for Essex. But, you mentioned there Durham's batting. I think, for me, that's too inconsistent. Too many low scores, effectively. Too many single-figure scores. Bedingham got a duck in the first innings. Burnham got one in the first innings. Eckersley got four in the first innings. He got a golden duck. Rain got one, all in the first innings. And then Lees, he got a duck. Will Young got a golden duck, and that was pretty poor. Dismissal from him as well. Yeah, got bowled leaving. And then Poynter got one and Rain got three. So, especially like guys like Rain and Carr, you're not necessarily expecting to get all the runs, but they're guys who can still bat. They've still got runs before. So they're there if you need them to fall back on. And for me, that's where Durham lost the game is their batting.
Is that not a bit harsh though, Joe? I mean, it is the start of the season. You mentioned there David Bedingham scored 180 last week against Notts. Eckersley as well scored a ton.
Yeah, but that was last week.
Correct. But again, this is against the defending champions. And Simon Harmer at Chelmsford is just a completely different beast. He tears through opposition no matter who they are. Is it not a bit harsh on Durham, considering just how good of a fight they did put up against the defending champions?
I understand that. Overall, in the big picture, Durham, just looking at the loss margin, Durham can take the positives away from this game, of course. As I said, they only lost by 44 runs, which isn't reality that big. Lanks won by 209 runs, as an example. So maybe I am being a bit harsh on Durham, but I do think that if you want to be a consistent side, you've got to put up more. I'm not necessarily saying, the likes of Bedingham, Burnham, Eckersley, these guys are going to go out and get hundreds every week. But I just think they've got to put up a bit more of a fight. And as I say, I understand Harmer was very good, but in fact, Harmer only got out Bedingham and Eckersley. He didn't get Burnham out. He didn't get Carr out. So, there were times where maybe they could have put up more of a fight against some other bowlers, really. So, yeah, maybe I'm being too harsh on Durham, but as I say, I'm not saying that they should go out and get 100 every week, these guys, but to have that many players getting single-figure scores, especially in your kind of like middle to late orders, is not ideal. So I think that's where Durham lost the game.
No, that's a fair point. And again, it comes back to building partnerships and meaningful partnerships as well. That is something which Durham do need to work upon this season. But again, early doors. And with that same attack, I do think that they do have chances in games this season. It's just about consolidating that batting order. They do need not just one big performance, because that was, again, last week I spoke about Benningham and Eckersley. They need other supporting roles as well, some cameos in there as well, I think, just to be a bit more successful. But to be honest, what a game of cricket. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this game down at Chelmsford. It was just a roller coaster. Day one was Durham's. Day two was Durham's as well. And then the tide just began to turn. It was the county championship, I'd argue, at its utmost best. And to be honest, I think Durham, they will be incredibly disappointed, but fair play to them. They put on a show with the ball. Borthwick put on a show with the bat. And again, Essex proving their pedigree and heritage as defending champions. They have got nerves of steel. And this is the difference. I know it's incredibly cliche, but winning is a habit. And they have got this proven track record of winning. And they win from, what I say, situations and scenarios where they're probably on the back foot. So fair play to Essex and a fantastic win for the southeastern side in Chelmsford this week. Moving on to our second game from Group 1, though. I say we go to Derby. We'll save the best till last because I've got a lot to talk about with regards to the certain last game at Trent Bridge. But we'll go to the Ancora ground next because Derbyshire and Worcestershire, this was a very, very compelling game, I have to admit. And for those who don't understand how I'm talking about each of these, I had all 9 games actually on my screen. It was brilliant. We'll be showing the links to that again heading into Round 3. But with regards to this game, I wanted to touch upon one person in particular, Joe, before we look at the game as a whole, and that is Matt Critchley. Now, there's been a lot of talk on Twitter. There's been a lot of talk in my Instagram messages as well. I had 3 messages alone last night talking about Matt Critchley's start to the season and whether or not he could warrant and justify an England call-up in the future. Now, before we talk about his particular performance in this game, where he scored 109 and 84 respectively in both innings as well as taking a 5 in the first innings, I just wanted to read out his stats from this season so far. So bear in mind, very, very early doors. We are just 2 games into the season. But in 2 matches, 340 runs, an average of 85, decent strike of 65 as well. And in that, he has not been dismissed for a score below 50 yet. He's got a century and 3 50-plus scores. Now, in addition to being an absolute asset with the bat, he's also been excellent with the ball as well, so far taking 10 wickets at 16.5 and a very, very shrewd economy rate of 2.58. So, Joe, in your opinion, and of course, England's middle order, very saturated, as we know, with the likes of Stokes, Butler, Pope, potentially Lawrence as well, depending on this match situation. Do you think that Matt Critchley is knocking down the door for an England call-up just yet? What's your thoughts on that?
I think he's in with a chance, but I don't think he's there yet. You know, he's put in, obviously, some very, very good performances this season. But for me, you can't judge that off 2 games because then a lot of people will be making, not to say Critchley's not a good player, but a lot of people will be making their England debut. That's just a fact. I personally rate Critchley. I think he's a good player. But for me, he needs to do this all season. And I know we're talking about a test place here, but if he does that in the T20 as well, I'm not sure if he's in the 100, but if he's not, then he does that in the One Day Cup. Then that's obviously only going to help towards his England place. Maybe if he has a good year, he gets on the plane to the Ashes, because obviously, you know, he's a middle order batter who also is a spinner. So that is kind of maybe he, I mean, how old is Critchley? He's only like early to mid-20s, isn't he? So, you know, he's got a long time ahead of him in his career, just in his general cricket career. Maybe he's the successor to Moeen Ali in the future. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, certainly going about the right way. But for me, for now, let's say there was a test match next week, he would not make the team purely because he's not done it for long enough. As in, he's not putting these performances for long enough.
Fair enough. I mean, Joe, I have to agree. And I do like Matt Critchley. I think he is a great talent.
Not to say that he won't get in the future. As I say, I think he can. Yeah,
it's just at the moment.
Every chance. But just right now, he's just not performed this consistently for long enough.
Yeah, through gritted teeth, I have to agree, because he is a great talent. As you mentioned, mid-20s, I believe he's 24 years of age, and he is a very, very good prospect, I have to admit. And I know for a lot of Derbyshire fans, he's almost the talisman. Him, Madsen, Godaman, Deploy, they are the big names in that. Yeah, Lewis Rees as well, of course, can't forget him. In the Derbyshire team, they are the big names. But Matt Critchley has just been almost the prodigal son. He is
24,
the talisman. He is an asset with both bat and ball in hand. Pretty good fielder as well. has to be said, and he has been incredibly impressive so far this season. So although for the time being, I do think it's a little bit early to rush him into an England team which is already saturated with middle-order options, I just hope that he has a good season. I really, really hope he has a good season for both his benefit and, of course, for England's, because it is never a bad thing to have options. And let's say we do have a tour to the subcontinent in 2022, 2023, and he's come off the back of an excellent county championship and a T20 blast, it's only going to be a good thing for Three Lions and a crown. So fair play to Matt Critchley. He's been a fantastic start to the season. And yeah, he was excellent in this game. And talking of this game as well, before we go into the actual the moments of this game, also just wanted to give a quick mention to Harvey Hussain as well. Another guy who's just had a really, really impressive start to the season. Saved, arguably, the game against Warwickshire alongside Critchley in the second innings at Edgbaston. And then in this particular game, kept up his excellent start, producing knocks of 83 and 55 and out, respectively. So fair play to Harvey Hussain as well. And I know we've spent a lot of time talking here about Derbyshire. Let's go on to the flip side. Let's talk about Worcestershire. Because as much as we do have banter with Worcestershire, as a Warwickshire fan, I have to give them a lot of credit. They showed a lot of fight, a lot of spirit, a lot of courage and a lot of valour. Because to save the day with Ben Cox and Ed Barnard, Worcestershire were in so, so much trouble. I think it was the 36th or 37th over of their innings, and they're 6 wickets down. These two come to the crease. Ed Barnard, as we know, has had an incredibly impressive start to the season. Took 5 for 88 in this match. But with the bat, his 35 from 110 balls in that 85-run partnership with Ben Cox, who scored 60 not out, saved this game for the Pears. That cannot be understated. Those two dug in as though their lives depended on it. They were so resolute, so resilient. The fortitude that they showed against the likes of Michael Cohen, against Sam Connors, against Ben Aitchison, guys like that was absolutely remarkable, and they deserve so, so much credit. And that's coming from a Warwickshire fan, so you know that this must have been a very, very good partnership, to say the least, for the West Midlands side. In addition to that, I also just wanted to mention Tom Fell. Of course, for those who know the backstory of Tom Fell, he is one of the best comeback stories in county cricket, given what he has been through in the past 4 or 5 years. And to see him going out there, churning out consistent runs in this particular game was fantastic. In the first innings, really, really held the line well for Worcestershire. Dug in, entrenched himself adeptly, scored a solid 69 from 147 balls to take Worcestershire up to a pretty competitive first innings score of 305 in the 102nd over of their innings. So to be honest, it was a very, very good game. I did enjoy it. And the final hour in particular, when you got Ben Cox out there and he is just digging in block, 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 more blocks than Legoland Windsor. It was absolutely superb viewing as a Red Bull fanatic. So fair play to Worcestershire, fair play to Derbyshire as well. Both evenly matched sides, it has to be said, have had decent starts to the season. So yeah, fair play to both. That was an excellent game at the Ancora Ground and I thoroughly enjoyed it as a neutral fan. Moving on to the third and final game of the week though, in Group 1. I did say we're going to save the best till last. And before I talk about Warwickshire in my typical biased Bear and Ragged Staff way, we have to touch upon Notts. Now, for those who don't know, with regards to Nottinghamshire, the last time that they won a Red Bull game was 2018. They last beat Essex. That was their final Red Bull win. They have not won a game since then. And this was a massive, massive opportunity for Notts. And I, as much as I'm a Warwickshire fan, and I celebrated this game, as those who follow us on Twitter, Instagram will know, I did celebrate it quite wildly, has to be said. But Notts really, really had a chance to kill this game. And I think they'll be absolutely gutted not to finish the Bears off in this particular match. So before we touch upon the actual game itself, Joe, I just wanted to ask you a question with regards to Notts. Do you think that they can break that duck anytime soon this season? Because as I said there, we have seen, I think we've seen a lot of improvement from this Notts team. With both bat and ball in hand, they've got some exciting talent. Hasib Hameed, for example, Lyndon James, Liam Paterson-White, who had a fantastic game against the Bears in this particular encounter at Trent Bridge. Do you think that Notts have enough in that squad, in both the batting and bowling department, to finally break, I think, this 29-game curse? Do you think that they have enough weaponry in the arsenal, per se, to finally break that duck in the next week or so?
Yeah, I think... Okay, so let's look at the group as a whole. So they've already lost to Warwickshire. They drew with Durham. The Durham game was a bit flat. Well, not flat, but it wasn't really a chance to win as such. kind of just like tailed off. Now, the Warwickshire game was a real chance to win, and I was disappointed to see that Notts couldn't get over the line. I was really hoping that they would win. So, yeah, I mean, I think on paper, they have a better side than Derbyshire. They have a better side than Worcestershire, especially if Stuart Broad is available. Essex, maybe not so, just because we know how good Essex are. But they, as I say, they got so close to beating Warwickshire. I think that win can come this year. But I think it's definitely something that's got to be hanging over their heads. You know, to have not won for how long did you? 29 games?
It's something like that. It's crazy. 28 or 29 games now in Red
Bull
cricket.
Yeah, and I guess the eventually you kind of have to start looking at not pointing the finger, but maybe looking at reasons for this in terms of, is Stephen Mullaney the right man for the job at this point? You know, they've not won in 29 games. Mullaney is, as far as I'm aware, has been captain in those games. So again, if I'm wrong, feel free to point that out, because I may be, but as far as I'm aware, Mullaney has been the leader in all those games, the captain in all those games, if he's been available. So maybe you have to look at a common denominator. Maybe it's time to try something new. Or maybe it's just in general, the whole club have had a big white ball focus. And I think that's shown. And they've had success in white ball cricket very as recently as 2020. But maybe that kind of whole focus in the club needs to change to be more balanced, because Peter Moores isn't necessarily known for his white ball kind of coaching, which is quite incidental, really, considering Notts are really, really good at white ball cricket and pretty average, you would probably say, at red ball cricket. Not to say that they're a bad side, they're just not the top side. So, look, there's definitely places that you can kind of point the finger and say, well, this is something we can improve on, this is where you can make a change. But again, I'm not saying do that. I'm not saying do that this season, if they do it at all. But you know, you have Hasib Hamid, who's going to be captain in the 50 over. Maybe you give him a game as a captain in Red Bull cricket. At the end of the day, again, Mullaney's a great player. And he's a great leader. He's ex-Lanx. So I'm not going to come and call him out or anything. I'm just saying maybe it's been, 3 years? It's been a long time. So maybe it's time to change things.
Well, Joe, let's have a look at it from an outsider's perspective then. And Notts fans as well, we'd love to know your opinions on this, because it is so interesting. It really is. Like, it is the big talking point, I think, of the county championship so far this season. When will Notts actually break that duck? Because it isn't nice to see. I'm going to be honest, with a team like Notts, with the history, the tradition, the pedigree, okay, this is a big, big club at a test venue as well. And I think it's fair to say that
good batting track as well. And I've always noticed that Notts, well, I mean, look at this game. Is that Trent Bridge only one score over 300, and that was in ironically on day four, when it's the hardest to bat anywhere in the country, just because it's the last day. So, yeah, I mean, maybe it's how Notts apply themselves. You know, as Trent Bridge typically is, well, he's certainly up there with the best batting tracks in the country, arguably the best batting track in the country. You know, look at all the records England have broken in white ball cricket there. And maybe it's different in red ball cricket. There have, to be fair, been some low scores there. Certainly in the international cricket. Exactly. That's what I'm mainly thinking
8 for 15, Stuart Broad.
Having said that, the pitch won't really differ that much between the actual pitch, that is, won't really differ that much between red ball and white ball. It'll be more the actual ball that they use. So, look, maybe something to do with that. I just think Notts, certainly at home, need to be looking to get 300 plus consistently, because another factor in that is bonus points. You know, they got two batting bonus points in this game. I mean, sure, they got maximum bowling points, but you know, there's what I think five batting points. There's 200, 250, 300, 350, 400. Five batting points up for grabs, you know, and they are not hitting the 300, 350 consistently. So yeah, sorry, I cut you off halfway through a point, but and I've kind of tailed off, so yeah.
Well, no, it's fine, mate. I'll bring us back on track to our original conversation, which was from our perspective and Notts' perspective. Because you mentioned there about changing of the guard, per se, with the captaincy. You also mentioned about the focus on white ball cricket. And of course, that has worked. We can't deny that. White ball cricket in Nottinghamshire has been absolutely fantastic. Okay, they've been the dominant force in T20 cricket since 2017. They also have that Royal London One Day Cup trophy, which they won in 2017 as well. as a result of that fantastic individual performance from Alex Hales. My question to you, Joe, and for any Notts fans out there listening to this, is do you think that it's time for Notts to switch that around in terms of the focus, in terms of bringing in a new captain? That's the first thing. That's the first question that I'd like Notts fans and, of course, yourself, Joe, to answer. And then the second question, given the lack of success in the county championship, but the immense amount of success in white ball cricket, are you willing to trade that off and swap them around, considering that there are no guarantees in red ball cricket, given the strength of Essex, Somerset, seems like Hampshire as well? Are you willing to trade off white ball success in pursuit of red ball glory in, let's say, 4 or 5 years' time? Joe, what are your thoughts? And of course, Notts fans, please do let us know on Twitter at the County Cricket 2.
Yes and no. Now, I'm going to kind of take this down a road that we've kind of discussed a little bit before, and that is get a red ball coach. We've seen Sussex do it. We've seen other clubs do it, but Sussex are now currently doing it, where obviously one coach is the head coach of red ball cricket and assistant for white ball cricket and vice versa. For me, that could work for Notts. If you still have Peter Moores there, who's going to be the head coach of white ball cricket, who, as I said, ironically, is known for his red ball coaching. But let's say he's the white ball head coach. You get a red ball head coach as well. And then they're each other's assistants for the opposite formats or the opposite. For opposite formats, limited overs cricket and four-day cricket. To me, that is a route Notts could be pursuing because, you know, you mentioned there, are you willing to trade off white ball cricket or white ball success to win a county championship? But you don't have to. This way, you do not have to at all. You've still got Moores there. In Red Bull, in and around the Red Bull environment, who knows the squad very well. They have had success as a club just in general, so he will know what kind of works to them. And they're still a good Red Bull side. So to me, that is the thing. That's what Notts should be doing. And then you take that, whoever the new head coach is, I don't know, just whoever it is, you then ask him or her, do you want a new captain? And then they say, no, we'll stick with Mullaney. Or yeah, we'll put our own flavour on it almost. You know, we'll take it down our own road and see what happens. Because for me, that could be, as I say, we've seen Sussex do it to who knows how much success, but they've certainly started the season pretty well. Especially that draw against Lancs, which was an exceptional draw. But yeah, they've started the season pretty well. Is it going to work for them later on? Who knows? I guarantee you when they've won all four trophies at the end of the year, we'll be saying that's a great idea. Everyone should be doing that. We'll see. To me, that's what Notts should do. If at the end of the day, the way I see it is their Red Bull cricket is not going to get any worse. All right. And not to say they're a bad team, but they're just not in form for 3 years. It's a long time to be out of form, but that's how it is. So the way I see it, the Red Bull cricket is not going to get any worse. I think they should take it down the road of two coaches.
That's an interesting take. And it will be interesting to see if Notts do actually come up with any innovation like that, of course, if this problem does continue to get worse. I'm going to be honest, I think they are going to break that duck this season. I know that they have been really, really woefully out of form in Red Bull cricket, and it is the cloud that is hanging over their proverbial shoulders, both this season, last year in the Bob Willis Trophy, 2019 as well. But you look at the names on the squad. You've got England players. If Stuart Broad's in there as well, he is a massive boost. Dane Patterson as well in this game on debut took 6 wickets, looked like an absolute menace. The ball to Matt Lamb in particular in the second innings was an absolute jaffer. Pitched just outside off, tailed back in, late swing, removed his off pole and sent it cartwheeling. So you've got 2 international quality bowlers there. You've got an exciting young talent in Lyndon James. You've got Joe Clark. You've got Ben Duckett. You've got Tom Moores, Haseeb Hameed as well. You've got all of these fantastic players. But for me, I don't think that it's necessarily the personnel. I think the issue now for Notts is that this has been going on for so many...
Hanging over the head.
Yeah, it's been going on for so many years now that this is almost a mental blockage. It's a bit like Joe Root when he couldn't score a century in Test cricket. These things accumulate. They clog up and they actually prevent a team from getting that clarity in pressure situations in a match. And this is the thing with Notts. If you compare them to Essex, okay, Essex, by far the stronger team, by far in a better position, they're defending champions. But if you look at the difference between these two and their performances, Essex were on the back foot and fought back like absolute lions. They fought like a good team. And that is the difference between a good team. It's the fact that they can come back from the depths of defeat and fight, get back into the game and actually end up winning, because winning is a habit and Essex have that habit. Unfortunately, for the time being, Notts just simply don't. And in this game, when you've got Warwickshire on the back foot on 184 for six, bear in mind, without a batsman, Dom Sibley was injured since day one in this game. He's broke his finger, unfortunately, after shelling one in the slips. But Warwickshire basically have three wickets and well over 150 runs in order to win this game. 149 runs at that particular moment. That game should have been finished off. And I think Notts fans will be incredibly disappointed. The fact that they did not win in that position shows that, for me personally, this is all just a mental blockage now. It shows that because they have not got that winning habit, they just could not finish this game off when it was required. And it is a massive, massive shame. But with that being said, Notts fans, do not be too disheartened, because there are definitely signs of improvement. Mentioned there about Broad, his spell to Sam Hain was absolutely electrifying. Dane Patterson as well, really impressive on debut. Lyndon James continues to impress me, was really, really good with the ball. The ball to dismiss Hanuma Vihari on debut was absolutely magnificent as well. Sent his stumps flying all over the shop. So there is definitely some positives to take away and some optimism for Notts fans to have. But again, it all comes back to that one main question, and that is, how seriously are Notts willing to take Red Bull cricket heading into the future? And that is something which I suppose we'll only find out in due course heading into the course of this season and, of course, the years beyond that. But I think that's enough talk about Notts, because, of course, there was another team competing in this particular game, the victorious team, the team which had not won a game for 577 days. And I remember the date, 19th of September 2019. Funnily enough, also against Nottinghamshire at Trent Bridge. Warwickshire finally broke their duck. And we mentioned it on last week's show. And before we get into it, I will just give a warning. This is going to get incredibly Warwickshire biased. If you want to skip ahead, all non-Warwickshire fans, feel free. We'll leave a timestamp in the description. But with regards to this performance from Warwickshire County Cricket Club, if there's one way that I can describe it, it was brilliant. It was brilliant. It was courageous. It was brave. They showed so much heart, so much determination, so much fight against a Notts team which had us on the ropes. We were without our talisman, basically, Dom Sibley, the man who has been our leading run scorer in county championship cricket since 2018, a guy who is an England test opener, scored a century against the West Indies at Old Trafford last summer, and is one of the finest Red Bull batsmen in the country. And we lost him before we even faced a ball in our innings. So we are basically one man down. We've got 10 men taking on a seam attack with Stuart Broad, Dane Patterson, Stephen Mullaney, Lyndon James, Lynn Patterson and White as well. I know he's a spinner, but he was fantastic.
Zach Chappell.
Particular game. Zach Chappell as well with the new ball. Can't forget him. He was actually very, very good in this game. But for Warwickshire to come back from, let's face it, the depths of defeat, nobody expected it. Nobody expected it. I certainly didn't. I'm going to be honest. When I saw Tim Bresnan and Ollie Stone at the crease, as much as I rate and adore those two as batsmen and know that they can't bat, I did not expect that at all. Tim Bresnan and Ollie Stone take a bow. Simple as that. They have got the freedom to the county of Warwickshire. Simple as that. They have put a smile on every single person's face in Shakespeare's County. They really have. To produce that kind of performance under fire against top quality bowlers in a situation where everybody's writing you off, you're without your talisman batsman, you've lost your top order, you're batting alongside the tail, it is absolutely exceptional. This is the kind of fight that we've wanted to see from Warwickshire for years, okay? And I'm so, so happy for these guys. I really am. You could tell how much this win meant to them with the celebrations both after the game and on social media. This was a team that came together as a collective and put up the fight of a lifetime. And you can say that this is hyperbole, exaggeration, but I come back to the original point. 577 days we've been waiting for this. We have been waiting for ages. And I think when Notts break their duck as well, they'll probably have twice as many celebrations as we have from this particular game. But for Warwickshire to come back in such brilliant regard, okay, when we were completely written off, we didn't have any of our top order out there to actually guide the tail. It's superb. It really is. And then, of course, in addition to the batting, which I'm obviously waxing lyrical about, I just wanted to mention the bowling as well. And one person in particular, when you think of April, you don't think of spinners. I'm going to be honest. And Joe, as you said, Trent Bridge is a very, very good track. But the spin battle that we've seen at Trent Bridge again in this particular game between two left arm off spinners in Liam Paterson-White and Danny Briggs was absolutely blockbuster. I loved it. And Danny Briggs in the second innings, knots were cruising. Then he takes a couple of quick wickets and sparks a collapse. He gets Warwickshire from potentially chasing 400 plus heading into day four to 333. That cannot be underestimated or understated. Danny Briggs was absolutely brilliant in that second innings. Completely killed Notts' momentum before it could even get going again. Took 4 for 68. And then if that is not enough, our new signing then scored 16 not out alongside Brez to win the game for the Bear and Ragged staff. If I could just say one thing to any of the guys, if they are listening, Robbo as well as coach, take a bow, lads. Simple as that. And let's keep this momentum heading into the rest of the season, because that performance to a man was absolutely outstanding. That is what we as Warwickshire fans want to see. We want to see that fight, that courage, that resilience. That is exactly what we want to see from this team. And that winning feeling really, really does feel good. Okay, I'm still on a high, as you can tell. It is Tuesday when we're recording this. We won on Sunday. I'm still not over it. I'm absolutely elated and ecstatic that we finally broke our duck. But now it's about consolidating our position, looking back on the footage, improving upon areas of weakness, which there still are, of course, with regards to runs in particular. We do need to score a lot more runs to be competitive this season. But in terms of that performance and the comeback nature of that performance, well done, lads. That's all I can say. You've made an entire county incredibly, incredibly proud. Now, moving on from Warwickshire and my waxing lyrical, non-Warwickshire fans, you can return back to the podcast now. We go on to Group 2, because Group 2 this week was incredibly, incredibly entertaining. And we start with arguably the big game of this entire round, which was the Cider Derby down in Taunton between Somerset and Gloucestershire. Now, before this game actually started, Joe, be honest, who did you think was going to win this game? Because I thought it was going to be Somerset.
Yeah, I thought Somerset would win as well, obviously. Very, very good side, Somerset. So this was probably shock of the week.
I don't think it's the shock of the week, I'm going to be honest. I don't think I'd go that far. But in terms of the performance itself, there are just two incredible stats. Okay, you know me, I like my stats that I just wanted to read out this week. This is the first time that Somerset have lost at the Cooper Associates County Ground in Red Bull cricket since 2017. That is the definition of a fortress. That is the first time that they've lost there in nearly five seasons. So that in itself is an impressive achievement, to say the least, for Gloucestershire. And then in terms of Gloucestershire in the county championship, this is the first time that they've beaten Somerset in the Cider Derby in Red Bull cricket in Taunton since 1993. So 28 years it was since the last time that they beat Somerset in Red Bull cricket in Taunton. What an achievement. What a brilliant, brilliant achievement this is for Gloucestershire. And this cannot be understated either. This is a massive, massive victory. And they have gotten off to a brilliant start to the season, beating Surrey and Somerset, arguably two of the three best teams in the entire group. And they have beat them convincingly. Let's not beat around the bush here. They have beat them emphatically. And one man in particular who really shouldered the responsibility, a man that we've had on this podcast, someone who likes these pressure situations, these big games, taking the responsibility of the team onto his back and carrying them, is James Bracey. Now, James Bracey, as we all know, was in and around the England squad in summer. He's an incredibly impressive batsman, very dogged, gritty, resolute batsman. And in this particular game, he shone out like an absolute beacon. And for Gloucestershire fans, it must have been a sight to behold, because James Bracey at the crease was leaving it well. He was defending it well. He played some beautiful expansive drives as well. And his knocks of 118 and 83 and out contributed to 43.2% of his team's entire run total in this game. Joe, I just wanted to know your thoughts. What are your thoughts on James Bracey, the batsman, and just how impressive was he in this particular Cider Derby?
I think he's a very, very good player, James Bracey. I think he was unlucky not to get a chance with England. I mean, it must have been very frustrating for him, obviously, being in the bubble for so long in the summer. Obviously, he went to India and Sri Lanka as well as a reserve, and obviously didn't get a game there either. So I think he's probably up there with one of the players. I mean, we talked about Critchley maybe knocking on the door. He's probably, in terms of batters for me, he's probably the next in line to earn an England Test cap, because he's a very, very good cricketer. You know, some of the knocks that he plays, you can open the batting as well. Mm-hmm. In fact, he got, was it 80 that he got for England in inter-squad game? It was at Hampshire, and I think he got 80. It was before the first test, opening the batting against Jimmy and Jofra, if I remember rightly. So, yeah, that's not exactly bad. So, yeah, I think James Bracey is a very, very good player. Obviously, can keep as well. It's another string to the bow. Should Josh Butler be England's test keeper? There's debate on that. So, that's a way for Bracey to maybe get in England side as well. So, I think, as I say, I think he's a very, very good player. And it was good to see him getting runs. And as I say, in my opinion, he's the next batter in line to get an England test cap.
Fair enough. And it's always nice, isn't it, to see a former guest here at the County Cricket Podcast going out there, performing well, getting runs under the belt. And to be fair, for Gloucestershire, another man who's been in excellent form is Chris Dent. Really, really good start to the season. I know he didn't have a massive second innings total, unfortunately, in this game, but his 50 in the first innings alongside Bracey really helped to steady the ship for Gloss. So again, Chris Dent, someone to watch out for this season. He is criminally underrated in my particular opinion. He always goes under the radar, never really in the England conversation, but he always just churns runs out so, so consistently. So keep an eye out for Chris Dent this season. And then, of course, with regards to Gloss, the other really, really impressive element of their team this week was their bowling attack. And their bowling attack so far this season, very, very early days. Okay, we're only two games into the season, but they have been relentless. They do not give a single inch to any batting opposition. I look at the likes of David Payne, Ryan Higgins, who took 7 wickets in this game, was a real key player for Gloss in this particular encounter. Matt Taylor, Graham Van Buren, and then one guy who I just wanted to really focus in on this week, because it's always nice to see people making their first-class debut, and that is Dom Goodman from Buckinghamshire. So Dom Goodman is a seamer, for those who don't know. He looked so impressive in this particular game. Line and length was absolutely exceptional, and his match figures of 3 for 54 from 25 overs on debut in a cider derby against Somerset, last year's losing Bob Willis Trophy finalists, runners-up in the 2019 County Championship. I was immensely impressed. I really, really was impressed with Dom Goodman. For Gloucestershire fans, again, keep an eye out for this guy. He looks like a real, real fine talent. Let's not get carried away and say he's going to be the next Broad or Anderson or anything ridiculous like that, but he does look like a very, very good county option, to say the least, for the southwestern side. But that's enough about Gloucestershire, Joe. Let's focus in on Somerset, because it hasn't been the ideal start to the season, which Somerset fans would have wanted. But again, I don't think it's been the worst start either. I just think they've been a bit slow at the gate, but they have got the pedigree. We know what Somerset are capable of. And before we talk about the team as well, can we just touch upon and appreciate the quality of Somerset's live streams? They're the best in the game, in my opinion. They really are. I think it's called My Action Replay. The replay, the slow-mo that you see of like Marchant de Lange bowling absolute heat at James Bracey. And you can just see the footwork, which is impeccable. Leaves it, you see the wickets as well. The quality of Somerset's digital stuff is absolutely off the charts. So big up to Somerset's team for that, because it's been brilliant to watch as a spectator at home and, of course, on the go as well. But with regards to Somerset, I suppose we have to touch upon one person in particular who, unfortunately, is not in the greatest of forms, and that is Tom Lamonby. Someone who there's a lot of talk. We mentioned him here on the podcast on the preview. There's been a ton in the written media as well with regards to just how good this guy is after a brilliant Bob Willis Trophy campaign in 2020 for the Wyverns. But looking at his score this season, he scored 5 and 3 ducks in a row. So it's been a pretty, pretty slow start to the season, to say the least, for Tom Lamonby. Now, Joe, I just wanted to know your thoughts on Tom and what could he do in terms of maybe getting out of this rut, and how important will the support of Somerset fans be on social media or at the ground once we are allowed back in to actually getting him out of this tough period? What are your thoughts on that?
It's never ideal to get 5 runs to start your season as a total. I mean, a pair. I don't know if he's ever got a pair in his career before, but, you know, again, regardless of if he has or hasn't, that's not going to be an easy thing to overcome. Maybe it's something to do with the fact that he's opening with Tom Bant. Maybe that's, and again, that's not obviously Tom Banton's fault, but they're very different styles of players. Tom Banton's very much an aggressive opening batter who will obviously obviously plays the situation. I mean, he got 29 or 40, 18 or 45. So he didn't score too slow, but he didn't score too quick. But generally, Tom Banser would go hard at the ball early and look to score runs from the off. Tom Lamonby is a very, very different style of batter. I don't know if they've ever opened before for Somerset. So I don't think Tom Banser's ever opened in Red Bull cricket before. So I think this will be the first time they've done this together, because Lamonby doesn't open in T20 cricket. So maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe Steve Davis moves up the order to open the batting instead of Banton. Or maybe Lamonby just needs time out of the team. Maybe it's
really?
Something like that.
Already?
But he's got five runs.
But it is two games. And Joe, in his defence, you look at
2020. But if he goes and plays in the second team.
Season.
No, he did. But if he goes and plays in the second team and gets 100, bring him back in the team. He only needs to go into an environment where there's less pressure. Because let's be honest, there's pressure when you're playing any professional sport, there's pressure. If he goes into a second team game where you know, there's less pressure, he goes out there, gets 100. He's obviously, I mean, I'm not disputing it, he's an absolutely class player. But maybe that's what he needs. Maybe he just needs some time away from first-class cricket for a week. Maybe not yet. But, you know, especially if he struggles in the next game, maybe then that's the time to say, you know, go and play some second-team cricket. I've heard that's worked before for people. Again, I don't know what would work for Tom, what wouldn't. But, yeah, maybe that's the thing to do. And, yeah, I mean, Somerset fans, they're not horrible people, so they're not going to be abusing him all over social media. You know, they can, as you said, they can only really help. And when they're back in the ground again, that can only help. Well, that can only help every player, surely.
Yeah.
I would like to imagine. So, yeah, maybe that's what Lamonby needs, is just a week away from the team, goes and gets some second team cricket under his belt. In fact, I don't even think second team cricket and championship cricket clash. I'm pretty sure they don't overlap in terms of when the games are. So maybe he even goes and just plays another game. Sure, it's a lot of cricket for him to play, but if he gets runs, carries that good form straight onto another four-day game, why not?
Well, I suppose we'll just have to wait and see, Joe. I'm going to be honest, I think it's a bit early in the season to drop him, in particular after last season when he was so impressive.
I'm not saying drop him.
But even for a week, I just think it's given the wrong impression. Like, this is a young batsman who, let's face it, had a stratospheric rise in the county circuit last season. People went from not knowing him to suddenly he is the star boy. He's going to be playing for England. He's going to be producing and churning runs for Somerset week in, week out. And then at the first time or the first point of hardship, we can't just drop him. I think that's the wrong thing for a young batsman. What he needs right now is an arm around the shoulder from Somerset, from his players, from the playing staff as well. And of course, the fans. You mentioned there Somerset fans. We know what Somerset fans are like. They are brilliant. It is like a family down there in Taunton. Okay, for Tom, don't go on his back. As I said, be supportive with him. We know what this guy's capable of, and he's just in a rough patch. Okay, it happens to every single cricketer. So for Somerset fans, I wouldn't be too alarmed. I'm going to be honest, but he just needs that support network, in my opinion, to get him up out of this particular rough patch. And fingers crossed, I honestly wish him the best for this season, and hopefully he does score some runs for the Wyverns as the season progresses. But Joe, I just wanted to touch upon another player from Somerset who really impressed me this week, and that's Marchant de Lange. The new signing came from Glamorgan in the summer, and with the ball, took match figures of 5 for 76, and also scored 37 in the first innings. We know he's capable of these useful lower-order scores. How big of an impact do you think that Marchant de Lange will have on this Somerset team heading into the rest of the season? Because we know the quality and the calibre of their same battery with the likes of Craig Overton, Lewis Gregory, Josh Davey, for example. How big of an X factor do you think that Marchant de Lange's extra pace, zip and bounce that he produces will be for the Southwestern side heading into the rest of the Champo?
Yeah, I think that's what Somerset are missing, is that 90-mile-an-hour bowler, and that's what de Lange is. Obviously, he's effectively replaced Jamie Overton, who's obviously gone to Surrey now. That's pretty much just a straight swap. Well, not county to county, but it's pretty much a straight replacement for Jamie Overton. And obviously, he's a different style bowler, and I think that's what Somerset need. They didn't really have this consistent 90-mile-an-hour bowler. If you think, you know, Langside Mahmood, Worcester have Azhari Joseph now. Yeah, Warwickshire have. I was going to say Warwickshire, and I said Worcester. Yeah, Warwickshire have Ollie Stone, Sussex have occasionally Jofra. So, you know, there's I mean, I could name more counties who have rapid bowlers. Yorkshire have Olivier. So, you know, certain counties have, or most counties have, this absolute rapid bowler who bowls very quick. And that, for me, is what Somerset are missing. Actually, ironically, Essex don't. Off the top of my head, can't think of one who bowls 9 miles an hour. But yeah, they're one of the only counties. So I think he can only take Somerset's attack to the next level. He obviously got that 100 last year for Glamorgan as well with the bat. You mentioned his batting. Remember that 100? That was pretty outrageous. So yeah, I think DeLonga's a good bowler. I'm a big fan of him. And he's the kind of bowler who, I mean, he has bowled a lot of overs in this game. Well, certainly in the first innings, he bowled over 20 overs. But for me, he's the kind of bowler who should be used in 3 or 4 over spells, where he comes on, you need a wicket. Kind of like Mitchell Johnson was used for Australia in that terrible Ashes in, what year was that, 2012?
2013.
Yeah, 2013.
Remind me.
yeah, kind of like how Mitchell Johnson was used there, where, you know, he bowled 4 or 5 over spells that were just devastating and he took 2 or 3 wickets per spell and ended the series with a ridiculous amount of wickets. Now, I'm not saying that DeLonga is, you know, as good as Mitchell Johnson, who is one of Australia's best ever. So, yeah, I mean, for me, that's how DeLonga can be used in that kind of... I mean, that's how I believe Joffrey should be used as well for England, by the way. That's how I think most fast bowlers should be used. So, yeah, DeLonga's a very, very good player. Can only benefit Somerset. I also think they don't use Tom Abel enough, or he doesn't use himself as a bowler enough. Because Tom Abel's a very, very good bowler. He bowls well in white ball cricket, and I think he could be very useful for Somerset as kind of that, like, that foil bowler almost. We used to actually see Jonathan Trott do it a little bit in Test cricket, you remember?
Yeah.
Abel's a better bowler than Trott, so maybe he could bowl more overs than that. I mean, you probably would want to dispute that. Yeah, I mean, that's how I would see maybe Abel being used in that kind of someone who can buy you a wicket, really, out of nowhere. One of those kind of bowlers. I think Abel's a great bowler in white ball cricket. I think he needs to use himself more as a bowler in red ball cricket. Because honestly, that Somerset attack, that is a good attack. You know, Gregory, Overton, Davey, DeLonga, Leach, and then Abel as well. That's a good attack. That is a very, very good attack. So... yeah, they've just got to figure out how to use DeLonga, as I say, and I think they've got a match winner on their hands.
Absolutely, yeah, and they do. I think the issue so far this season has been the batting, but again, it could improve as the season goes on. We know what Somerset are capable of. But yeah, I think that's enough from the side of Derby. What a result, though, for Gloucestershire, and what a game of cricket it was. Brilliant, brilliant stuff down at the Cooper Associates County Ground. But moving on, let's go on to a slightly more one-sided game, arguably, and that is Hampshire versus Middlesex at the Rose Bowl. Now, there is one man or one name on everybody's lips, and that is Mohammed Abbas, because this guy, we knew that he would be a good signing for Hampshire. We said it, him and Kyle Abbott, Keith Barker as well, who we haven't seen just yet, unfortunately due to injury, but those three are going to be menacing for Group 2 batsmen throughout this entire season. And Mohammed Abbas, in just his second game for Hampshire, his first at the Rose Bowl, takes 6 for 11 in the first innings from 11 overs. So he had an Akomi rate of 1. Okay. And as if this wasn't ludicrous and preposterous enough, he took a hat trick in just his second over, okay, across his first and second over, taking the wickets of Max Holden, Nick Gubbins, and Stephen Eskenazi. And then he took a 5 in his first 17 balls of the game. Joe,
is outrageous.
How ridiculously good was Mohammed Abbas in that game? He was unstoppable, wasn't he?
Yeah, firstly, on his figures, I thought it was very, very good that his figures were 11 overs, 6 maidens, 11 runs, 6 wickets. I thought that was very good. Pretty much like he's bowling, really. So, yeah, he's such a good bowler and wasn't that good, really, for Pakistan last year against England. He was good, but he wasn't incredible.
He got found out, didn't he? That was the problem.
Yeah,
England went on the front foot. He took the LBW out.
Yeah, he wasn't how everyone thought he would be, I don't think. He didn't really play to that level. I think Shaheen and, you know, those kind of people were a lot better for Pakistan. They were the kind of trickier challenge almost. But in county cricket, he just rips it up. He really does. It would be fascinating to see him bowl with a white ball for the first like three or four overs, just to see how much he can move that. I mean, after that, I'm not sure how effective he would be, but that would be fascinating. And also a pink ball as well, because the pink balls hoop, don't they? So I bet he was swinging a mile, and that would be very interesting to see him bowl with that. But I mean, it's remarkable the damage that he did to that Middlesex top order. As you say, him and Abbott. I mean, he got 9 wickets in a match, which isn't bad. He still bowled very, very well in the second innings as well. So yeah, I mean, Middlesex, I think, are a decent side, actually. I don't think Middlesex are a bad side. I just think Hampshire are on a bit of a roll right now. For me, they're the best side in the country at the moment. I'm trying to think of sides who are kind of matching them, and I can't. They're the best side in the country for me at the
moment.
Maybe
Gloss at the start. Because let's face it, look at Gloucestershire's opposition as well. Surrey and Somerset compared to Middlesex and Leicestershire, who were Division 2 sides beforehand.
I appreciate that.
Play some devil's advocate.
The way Hampshire are bowling right now, and also the way they're batting as well. They've got 319 in the first innings and 294. So they'd only lost 4 wickets. They're pretty much the same, give or take the same amount they got in the first innings, you know, give or take 30 runs. So, I mean, it's remarkable the way Hampshire are going. They look pretty unstoppable at the moment. And I would also like to shout out Ian Holland as well, who obviously, a former guest on the podcast, he obviously won that Australian TV show, which we seem to talk about quite regularly. Cricket Superstars, that's one. We seem to talk about quite regularly when we talk about Hampshire. And yeah, career best for him this week. So massive well done to Ian Holland.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's nice for me as a Warwickshire fan, because I remember him absolutely hammering us to get his maiden first-class century. It's nice to know that his highest first-class score is no longer against the Bears. So yeah, well done to Ian. He also scored 64 as well in that game. So scored well over 200 runs for Hampshire in this particular contest. And then another batsman who we do have to give a mention to is Sam Northeast. Now, he had a pretty difficult first game. Okay, it has to be said, against Leicestershire. He scored 19 when the rest of his team scored over 600 runs. But in this particular game, scores of 118 and 63. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. His partnerships with Ian Holland were devastating. They really were. And I don't think this is too outrageous to say, but they were just brutal. They were brutal. Between the two of them, they unleashed 48 boundaries and a 6. Okay, 48 boundaries. That is staggering in a county championship game. So the rate of which they were scoring was exceptional. And the way in which they were scoring was just brutal as well. So fair play to both Ian Holland and Sam Northeast. Thought those two in particular were brilliant. And then, of course, mentioned Carl Abbott and also Brad Wheel took 3 for 9 in that first innings against Middlesex. So, yeah, pretty dominant display from Hampshire. But we have to talk about the London club, Joe. We have to talk about the Saxes, currently bottom of Group 2 as a result of two pretty unfortunate poor performances, it has to be said. And in that first innings, you mentioned there about Bass. And if you look at the dismissals, something which I don't think teams have done so far just yet is what England actually did in the summer. And that was coming outside of the crease, going outside of the line and negating and nullifying Mohammed Abbas's biggest weapon, which is drawing in the LBW.
3 LBWs.
Batsman
3.
On the crease. Exactly. This is something which I think Middlesex could have done better in this game. And that's just being a bit more proactive. Going outside to the crease, he's not going to bowl you short balls. He's not going to bowl at terrifying pace all of a sudden. He doesn't have that weapon in the arsenal. So that's something I wish Middlesex would have just utilised in this particular game. But at the end of the day, it was a special performance by a special international player. So at the end of the day, you've got to just respect greatness at some points. But with regards to Middlesex, we have to look at the batting. Nick Gubbins in the second innings and Robbie White. Fair play to them. Put up a good fight. Scores of 67 and 73 respectively. And as well, Steve Finn took 6 wickets in this game. But Joe, what do you think is Middlesex's biggest problem in this particular season so far? Do you think it's the batting, the bowling? Is it a mix of both? Where do you think that the Saxes have really come undone so far in 2021?
As I say, I think they're a good side. I don't think they're a bad side at all. I just think, well, in this game, they obviously came up against 2 top bowlers. So, you know, Abbas, I understand what you're saying about how they didn't really do what England did, which is obviously step outside the crease, try and basically render that LBW dismissal that Abbas has useless. But at the same time, they're still facing a world-class red ball bowler. So, look, at the end of the day, I still think Middlesex are a good side. I do. They've obviously, I mean, Max Holden, all right, he's not had the most amazing start to the season, but I think he's a class player. Sam Robson got 100 the other week. So Yeah, Gubbins, I think he's been a great consistent player for Middlesex for years now. I'll tell you where they really lack is the middle order. You know, they don't really have much experience. Obviously, John Simpson in there at number seven, he's very experienced player, very good cricketer as well.
Great keeper as well. It's like a brilliant stumping in this game. Very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, Simpson is obviously is a great player, another former guest of the podcast as well. So yeah, he's a very good player, but I just feel like they're missing. Honestly, I feel like they're missing David Milan in this team. He's not been here now for 2 years. Well, not really 2 years, one and a bit years. This is his second year, he's not been here. And obviously, he's at the IPL now anyway. So that doesn't really matter. But I feel like David Milan at number five in this team would have been what Middlesex.
And he plays for Yorkshire.
Yeah, that's what I mean, though. They're missing him. He's not at the club anymore, yeah. David Milan at number five in this team, or that kind of a player, is what they're missing. He's very experienced. You know, he's played all around the world, he's played for England, he's got test hundreds in arguably the hardest place to do that in Perth. So, yeah, I think David Milan or that kind of a player, Owen Morgan, someone like that, is who they're missing in the team. Not that Owen Morgan would necessarily play, because I don't know what he's doing about playing Red Bull cricket anymore. But, you know, you get my point. And it's basically an experienced middle-order batsman. I could have just said that, is who they're missing. Yeah, I don't know who they're... They don't have an overseas, do they, Middlesex, for Red Bull cricket? Or have they got one coming in?
Pete Hanscom.
But that will be rectified. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, look, I think their bowling attack is very good. I think their bowling attack is very good. You know, Roland Jones, test player, or ex-test player, very, very good bowler. Finn, ex-test player, very good bowler. Mertz, but he didn't obviously play. Bamba is a good player. I think he's a good bowler. Mm-hmm. And helped out a little bit with the bat at number 11 as well. Salter's a great spinner. I really, really rate Salter. So, yeah, I mean, obviously there are ways that they can kind of improve and strengthen their batting lineup, but I think their top four is very, very good. I think Robson's a class player. We know how good he is. Obviously had test experience. Holden, in a few years' time, could be looking at an England spot if he can score runs. Very, very good player. Nick Gubbins, very good player. Eskenazi, very good player. So, you know, you're looking at four solid, county players there, four very good county players. And then from there, Robbie White, Anderson, good players, but not really got the experience. So maybe Hanscom comes into the... Well, Hanscom will come into the side. Maybe that's going to shore up their batting a little bit and kind of improve them.
Mm, I'd agree with you, Joe. I think it is a lack of experience in the middle order. They need an anchor, don't they? That's the thing with Middlesex. And again, a bit like Durham, we mentioned right at the start of the show, it's about building partnerships. Because I mentioned there about Gubbins and White, 67 and 73 respectively, but they didn't really have any support from the rest of the batting lineup. So that is going to be absolutely integral for Middlesex if they are to make a real charge in Group 2 this season. But moving on from that game down at the Rose Bowl, let's go on to the final Group 2 game of the week. A very, very, very high-scoring draw, it has to be said, down at the Oval.
Say that, yeah.
Between Surrey and Leicestershire. Yeah, it was definitely a week for the bowlers down in London, it has to be said. But Joe, who do you want to start with? Do you want to start with Ollie Pope and Surrey, or Hassan Azad, Sam Evans and the Running Foxes?
Yeah, so let's start with Surrey. Let's start with Ollie Pope, because he got 245 off. And you know I'll be a big fan of this innings, because it took him just 272 balls. So that is a perfect innings, in my opinion. You know, he didn't score too slowly. He didn't kind of go all guns blazing and try and hit, you know, 200 off 150 balls. He played a perfect measured innings. So, yeah, I mean, Ollie Pope is a very, very good player. Everyone knows that. Dipped in form a little bit, but this double 100 for me now kind of assures his place in the England team, even if it was any under doubt, which I don't think it was anyway. But, you know, people will have their doubts. Ben Folkes played another good innings. For me, should be in the test team. That's just how it goes. Should be England's starting keeper in the summer over Joss Butler. That's in my... Just, again, big debate. Everyone will have their different opinions. I just believe Folkes is a better red ball player and a better keeper than Butler. So, yeah, and Jamie Smith as well.
Didn't you want him dropped last week for Laurie Evans?
Jamie Smith?
Hmm.
I didn't say I wanted him dropped. I just said they could. I'm surprised they didn't put Laurie Evans in. But I'll tell you what, Jamie Smith, that is a great innings. That's why they didn't put Laurie Evans in. I'd say the only person who's not really got any runs is Mark Stoneman, actually. He's been someone who struggled for runs. Maybe they move Amla up to open the batting and Laurie Evans comes into the side for Stoneman. You know, at the end of the day, you've got a class player in Evans. He's not going to, he's only going to, you know, kind of improve the team, in my opinion. So, yeah, maybe that's something they look to do. Also, I think it's very interesting to know Ollie Pope batting four for Surrey. He's batted six for England. That is ridiculous. I don't know why he batted six for England. There's absolutely no chance he's a number six. You know, obviously Joe Root bats four. Ollie Pope should be at least number five. I think one day we'll see him bat number
over
three.
Over Ben Stokes, though.
Yeah. Over Ben Stokes. I think Ben Stokes should be batting at number six. Ollie Pope. Ben Stokes is the kind of player who... also, he's not. Ben Stokes is not going to be fit for the first test. So actually, let's stop talking about Ben Stokes. Ollie Pope will be batting five for England in the first test.
Fair enough, yeah. Ollie Pope, what an innings. Simple as that. Absolutely majestic. And I know there's a lot of parallels to be drawn, comparisons between him and Ian Bell. I mean, as a Warwickshire fan, I have to say, Ollie Pope does look the real deal, doesn't he? He played some glorious straight drives, late cuts, cover drives. Brilliant, brilliant player to watch.
He's a very good player. And to be honest, actually, reminds me, I've said this before, reminds me more of Joe Root than him. Like a young Joe Root than a young Ian Bell. I mean, his stance and his technique, everything like that, just doesn't really remind me of Ian Bell. Even the way his trigger movement is, just reminds me of Joe Root. So, yeah, let's hope we have someone who's going to get 8,000 and whatever it is, test runs, because that would be very helpful for England.
Absolutely, yeah, it would. And to be fair, this game was very, very much dominated by the batsmen. I think for Surrey, Jordan Clarke and Verdi did put up some decent fight with the
Jordan
ball.
Clarke. He's the most underrated player on the county circuit, in my opinion. I was gutted to see him leave Lancs, but I'm very pleased that he's doing well at Surrey. He's scoring runs at Surrey, taking wickets at Surrey. I'm very pleased he found his like kind of spot in the team, where it took him a little bit to kind of discover that and where he kind of fitted into their team. But now he's found that at number seven as the all-rounder. Yeah, very, very good player, Jordan Clarke. So I'm really pleased. And also, that is also my kind of inning. 61 of 54. Does not hang around. Absolutely whacked it. So yeah, well done, Clarkey.
Now, he's had a good start to the season. I'll give Jordan Clarke that. He has had an excellent start to the season. As you said, he does look at home down at the Oval.
But and all I'll say is, Stokes is injured for the first test. That's all I'll say.
Right, okay. We'll have to wait and see. Who knows? Tim Bresnan could be in there. Lewis Gregory. We don't know. We'll have to wait and see, won't we, with regards to that. But with regards to Surrey's opposition in this game, Leicestershire, I think they deserve an immense amount of credit for the starts that they had to this game. They put up a really, really good fight. Sam Evans, in particular, just wanted to mention him before Hassan Azad, who I do have another brief thing to mention about him. But Sam Evans was born in Leicester. He is Leicester through and through. And to see a guy score a century, and a well-made century, a gritty century, one where he rotated the strike well and really dug deep against a relentless Surrey attack, to see a guy like that score his maiden first-class century for his home county is brilliant. And he thoroughly, thoroughly deserved it. Him and Hassan Azad in this game were absolutely superb. Laid the foundation for the Running Foxes, dug deep, saw off the new ball well, and then expanded as their innings went along. I think it's a really, really well-managed century, that, from Sam Evans. So well done, Sam Evans. Deserves a massive, massive mention. Then with regards to another guy who just deserves a quick mention as well, Lewis Hill. Very, very good. Running Foxes, wicketkeeper, batsman. Lewis Hill scores 70 and 69 this particular game. Again, adding some much-needed and valuable runs down the middle order for the East Midlands-based side. And of course, last but by no means least, and I just wanted to give a real special mention to this guy, and that is Hassan Azad. Someone that myself and Joe, we've had conversations with. Hassan Azad has a heart of gold. He's a really, really nice guy and a very, very talented cricketer. And as you may know from last year, 2020, had a very, very difficult time of it for the Running Foxes. Scored 144 runs in five games, 150 plus score and zero hundreds. Going into the first game of the season as well, Leicestershire got absolutely hammered by Hampshire. He has had a really, really tough patch. Arguably the toughest patch that he's had as a cricketer to date. To see him come back in typical Hassan Azad style, really just digging deep, leaving balls well, utilising and trusting that front foot defence, which has made him one of the most reliable openers in county cricket since 2019. This was Hassan Azad, the Hassan Azad, that both myself and, of course, Running Foxes fans across the country and the world have become accustomed to. He looked himself again. He has the confidence running through his veins. And in this game at the Oval, I know it was a very, very batting-friendly wicket, but scores of 55. And then the big one for me, the really, really big one, was the second innings, 144 not out. Leicester shirt, what, on the back?
I guess a class attack.
It is a very, very class attack. It's an excellent attack. Who knows the conditions down at the Oval well? But this is the key thing. After that absolute bombardment of boundaries, courtesy of Ollie Pope, Jamie Smith, Ben Foulkes, the game completely flipped. From where Leicester should dominate the first couple of days, Surrey suddenly had all of the impetus and were in command of this game. They took a few early wickets, and Hassan Azad really just stood there like a gladiator. It was a brilliant innings. And for a guy who, as I said, was a bit out of confidence, maybe lacking a bit of form, a bit of self-belief, to come out and produce that knock at the Oval against Surrey, take a bow, Hassan Azad. It was a brilliant, brilliant innings, and one that we will not be forgetting here at the Cat Cricket Podcast for a very, very long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I say, the attack is great, by the way. Kemar Roach, how many test wickets is he? I think he's taken over 200 test wickets now, isn't he, Kemar Roach? Yep. Matt Dunn's a very good bowler. Amar Verdi's on England's books. Second best spinner in the country, by the way, Verdi. We'll come to that very shortly, I'm sure.
Literally the next county, yeah.
Jordan Clark, I've already said, great player. Jamie Overton, great player. Rory Burns and a Stoneman board as well in the second innings, which is on a par with Sibley bowling for England last year, to be honest. They're maybe not so much part of that class attack, but regardless, absolutely class to see Azad scoring the runs that he did over. Did he get over 200 runs? Oh, 199 runs in the match.
Hey, but one of them was a red inker, so you'll take it.
True, yeah, 100%. So yeah, 199 runs in the match, very, very good. Also, Lewis Hill with a good knock as well, 69 off 95. So yeah, fair play to Azad there. Absolutely brilliant. Great to see him getting runs. Hopefully there's many more to come.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, Foxes fans will be hoping for that as well. So yeah, Group 2, pretty good this week. I thoroughly enjoyed all three games, I have to admit. But of course, we move on to Group 3. By last, but by no means least, the third and final group of the 2021 County Championship. Joe, I'm just going to pass over to you. We alluded to it just there. You mentioned about spinners, and I know there'll be one moment in particular that you'll discuss at length. But let's go up to Old Trafford, because Lancashire looked pretty much at their best, to be honest, this week. It was a very complete performance by the Red Rose up at Emirates Old Trafford, beating Northamptonshire by a comfortable margin of 206 runs. Joe, mate, take it away. I'll let you have all of the focus on this one.
Yeah, and you say we're at our best, and I don't even agree with that. I don't think we're at our best yet. This Lancs team is seriously good side. Honestly, the fact that... firstly, I don't know why we played two spinners in this game. I would just like to point that out. Nothing on Hartley. He's a great player. I'm a massive fan of him. But Old Trafford is a spinning wicket, but it's April. I don't know why we played two spinners. Danny Lamb should have played. But as I said, I don't think we're at our best yet, and there is a reason for that. I just don't think our batting is quite there. Keaton Jennings is struggling for runs a little bit. Davis is class as ever, and Bohannon is class as ever. Both of those two look to be in full swing of things. And in the first innings, Croft, Villas, Jones, Wood, they all got the highest score out of those four was 26. So yeah, I think we just need a little bit more reassurance in our batting in the middle order. But Stephen Croft, last week I said I don't think he's in number four. And I look like a right idiot for saying that now, because he's going to got 100. 103 and out. The shot that you brought up with was brilliant as well. Massive six. I think off Nathan Buck as well. So, yeah. Stephen Croft is absolutely class. I still don't think he's in number four. I still think he should be batting lower. But, that's just my personal opinion. I still think Rob Jones should be batting number four. But I'm so happy for Crofty. That's his 13th or 14th Lancs ton now in first-class cricket. So, yeah, as I say, a massive... innings from him. I'm really, really pleased for him. And that kind of tipped us over the edge of, again, we didn't really get going in the second innings. Bohannon only got 22. Villas only got 24. Jones got 8. Wood got 17. So, we didn't really get the runs. I still feel like we're missing something in the middle order. So hopefully we can get an overseas batter in that middle order to kind of assure things. Because obviously now there's no Jackson Bird, which again, I still didn't think we needed Jackson Bird. Looking at our bowling attack, which is class, pure class. In my opinion, third best in the country or second best in the country, only behind Essex's. I think we just need, if we can get that battery, I think we're looking very strong this year. So the other person, of course, I have to mention is Matt Parkinson, who is now a professional drinks carrier after the winter, but has still got it with his bowling. Absolutely class performance from him. And there is one delivery in particular, of course, the dismissal of Adam Rossington. What a delivery, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
What a delivery. Shane Warne, saw this on Twitter, and he quoted the tweet. Sky Sports' tweet, who retweeted him. And Shane Warne loved it. Shane Warne, absolutely, yeah, it was class. And actually, he put a bit of a tongue-in-cheek comment saying, I bet that wasn't his first ball of the summer. Yeah. It pretty much was his first ball of the summer. He'd not bowled many overs at all. So, yeah, class by Parkinson. He's honestly such a good bowler. For me, the best overall spinner in the country, just across all three formats. The best multi-format spinner, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And probably England's, right now, England's second best test spinner, only behind Leach. Or red ball spinner, not test spinner. Only behind Leach. I'll say Verdi's third.
Over Moeen Ali?
Yeah. No, Moeen Ali's in the all-rounder bracket. Moeen Ali's in the all-rounder bracket. Moeen is. Yeah, over Verdi as well, man. 100%. 100%. England,
maybe in
when T20s. Was that? Honestly, I genuinely believe that. I genuinely think he's... Moeen Ali's in the all-rounders like bit, right? Moeen Ali's a class in his own and he's doing bits in the IPL right now. But yeah, in my opinion, he goes Leach, Parkinson, Verdi right now for England spinners. So yeah, although he did get a bit... He get a bit of a cop-out wicket, didn't he? With that OBW.
Save Zabe. I wanted to know that your thoughts on this. That didn't look out, did it?
Remember, it used to be the Specsavers County Championship.
They commented, yeah. Didn't they, on Twitter?
Yeah, they needed that back. Because honestly, that was... Well, it hit him. It was ridiculous. I don't know how to explain it. It just hit... He was. You could see all three stumps.
He hit him stood. On like a fifth stump line, didn't it?
Yeah, he was stood outside off stump. It was... Genuinely, like, I mean, safe, another former guest of the podcast. You have been very hard done by there because that was genuinely not out. That is something you'd expect to see. Well, I wouldn't even expect to see that in club cricket. So, yeah, terrible umpiring. But as I say, overall, I think Lanks are looking very strong this year. If we can just get that middle order kind of scoring a few more runs. But the bowling attack, I mean, Bailey, Mahmood, Wood. And Lam last week when he played, who, as I say, should have played in my opinion. They are four phenomenal seam bowlers. And to think that Richard Gleeson is still to come back from an injury, Lancashire are a seriously good team.
And yeah,
that's all I'll say.
Joe's incredibly unbiased Lancashire-based opinion there. But
honestly, I'm being honest. I'm genuinely, like, that is my honest opinion. I think Lancs are one of the best. I think we genuinely have one of the best bowling attacks in the country.
Fair enough. We'll have to wait and see as the season progresses, but on paper, well, yeah. They do have
again,
a very good attack.
This is going to come back to bite me, isn't it? I can tell.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. But of course, focus away from Lancs because it was a very complete performance, as I said right at the beginning of the segment. Let's talk a little bit about Northants, and in particular, a former Lancashire player who returned to Old Trafford this week, and that was Simon Kerrigan. Now,
which
again,
one?
What a
there
fantastic,
so many.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's true. But this was a fantastic, fantastic comeback performance from Simon Kerrigan. Okay, this is a guy who wasn't even in county cricket in 2019, was given a chance by Northants last year. I think he's on a 2 or 3 year deal for the side at Wantage Road. And to come back up to Old Trafford, his old stomping ground, after, let's face it, a difficult few years, both in and outside of cricket, it was phenomenal. It was absolutely phenomenal. There was no better sight, I don't think, this week than seeing Simon Kerrigan taking a fourfer, took 4 for 60 in the first innings, and he bowled so, so well. Great control, great accuracy, took some really key wickets as well for the East Midlands side. Simon Kerrigan, take a bow, mate. Simple as that. It's absolutely fantastic for us as county fans to see him back in the circuit. And yeah, he bowled very, very, very well for Northants this week. In addition to Kerrigan as well, just before we do move on from this particular game, just a quick shout out to Luke Proctor as well. I know, Joe, you like quick innings, but this was an innings of temperament, fortitude and resilience. 93 from 294 balls. Fair play to Luke Proctor. He dug deep as though his life depended on it. He was just blocking, 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 leaving. And the fact is, Lanks, for so many overs, just could not break his defences. He was absolutely impenetrable. So
Parky
fair play
did
to
eventually.
Luke Proctor. He did eventually, but with that being said, at least he put up a lot of fight.
Oh, definitely,
Northants,
yeah.
Fans, although this will be a difficult one to take, okay, it's a disappointing loss, of course. All losses are. At the same time, to have a guy like Proctor, Rossington as well in the first innings, putting up these pockets of resistance in the batting lineup, if the batting can come to the forefront, Northants do have some very, very capable bowling options. We haven't mentioned Ben Sanderson. Again, someone who has had a decent start to the season. Nathan Buck's another one. Simon Kerrigan, Save Zabe's a pretty handy bowler.
And Taylor.
Tom Taylor, of course, who took his 100th first-class wicket as well over the weekend. So that's just the thing with Northants. I think there's definitely lessons to be learned, but also positives to be taken. And I don't think they should be too disheartened by that. It was just an excellent performance from the Red Rose. But moving on from Old Trafford, let's go to Lancashire's, well, northern rivals, Yorkshire, because the White Rose put in a fantastic performance down at Canterbury this week, beating Kent by 200 runs at the Spitfire Ground. So one man in particular I just want to touch upon was Adam Lythe. He has had a scintillating start to the season for the Northern side. He is currently the leading run scorer in the Liverpool-Victoria County Championship with 380 runs, an average of 126.66, which includes two centuries and two 50s. So Adam Lythe, I think it's fair to say, has definitely been the standout batsman in county cricket so far. And he continued that form in superb fashion down in Canterbury with knocks of 97 and 116 in each innings respectively. So Adam Lythe, absolutely superb, carried the team on his back, shouldered the responsibility at the top of the order. And yeah, his incredible form continues. So fair play to Adam Lythe. Another Yorkshire batsman who looked very, very good this week, and thankfully for England fans looked incredibly good, was Joe Root in the second innings. Back in the swing of things in superb fashion, with a very classy and typically classy 101 from 139 balls, very fluent innings from the England skipper.
You know what the best thing about that innings was? Sorry, you know what the best thing about that innings was? Denley got him out.
Denley, to be fair to Denley, we'll touch upon this when we talk about Kent, but Denley actually had a very good week with the ball. Has to be said, he's had a lot of control with his leg breaks this week. And just a final Yorkshire batsman who I wanted to give a quick mention to is Harry Brook. Again, a very, very impressive young talent, someone to watch out for this season in both red ball and white ball cricket. He had two incredibly well-crafted knocks of 54 and 66 and out from 60 balls. Joe, you'll like this innings. 66 from 60 balls, which included 10 boundaries and a six. So 46 of those 66 came from boundaries. So yeah, if that doesn't describe Harry Brook's capabilities as a batsman, nothing else will. And then, of course, before we go on to Kent's and bowling, David Willey, good to see him back in red ball cricket, 5 for 61, tore through Kent with such incredibly precise ease. It was a fantastic performance from David Willey. And as well, Jordan Thompson, Duane Olivier and Steve Patterson, also very impressive for the White Rose.
Yeah, definitely. One thing I will say is, though, Don Bess still hasn't taken a wicket this season.
It is April, though, Joe. And to be fair,
Verdi, Leach, and played on. But Verdi, Leach and Parkinson have all taken wickets all around the country as well, at different venues. So, again, I'm not saying Don Bess isn't a good player.
He's played first game of the season at Headingley in the snow and then second game down in Canterbury.
Doesn't matter. He's still got to take wickets. To me, he's just falling further down the England pecking order now. And I don't think Don Bess is a bad player at all, but he's really going to start taking some wickets because, yeah, I mean, the selectors, well, as I say, we'll be looking at Verdi, Parkinson, Leach as their three go-to guys now. If they only take three spinners to the Ashes, yeah, Bess for me wouldn't be one of the spinners going at the moment. So he's got to take some wickets.
Well, of course, we'll have to wait and see. I personally do wish Don the best of luck, though.
He
needs some wish wickets, though. I do agree. He does. He needs some confidence back and some rhythm.
Just not against Lancs, because I don't want yours to be Lancs, obviously.
There it is. But moving on from Yorkshire, let's talk a little bit about Kent. I'm going to be honest, it's been a pretty disappointing start to the season. I thought Kent would actually be up there fighting this early on in the season, but unfortunately that has not been the case. Joe, what do you think the underlying problem has been with Kent so far? What do you think the underlying issue is? Because I'm looking at the batting there. Yorkshire in both innings have put up well in excess of 300. Kent have been bowled out for 265 and 244 with Darren Stevens and Matt Milnes. Okay, two tail-enders, basically. I know Darren Stevens more of an all-rounder. We know what he's capable of. Scored 237 against Yorkshire in 2019 at Headingley, funnily enough. But to have your two top scorers in the middle to lower order, and in particular Matt Milnes as night watchman. Fair play to Matt Milnes, by the way. Brilliant knock, 78 from 210 balls. But where do you think the real underlying issue has been for Kent this season? Is it their batting or their bowling? What's your thoughts on that?
I think it's their bowling, personally. I think they're letting teams get away from them. And I said, you know, I just don't think, aside from Darren Stevens, Harry Podmore's now injured, I assume, for the next game. I don't know what he's done, but he couldn't bowl in the second innings. So Harry Podmore's now injured. He's a good bowler. Darren Stevens, aside from him. Miguel Cummins just has not done. He's taken one wicket all season. And you mentioned that it's a track that's not going to suit Don Bess as a spinner. Well, Cummins is a seamer, so you can't make the same argument. Not you personally, but people can't make the same argument. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think there's much consistency with Kent's bowling, and also with the batting as well. You look at the likes of Denley and Crawley and Bell Drummond to kind of step up and get the runs. No Sam Billings, of course. So you look at those three in particular to get the runs. Bell Drummond got 13 off 13, 24 off 46. Crawley got 1 off 6 and 4 off 20. And Denley got 17 off 45 and 30 off 33. So none of those innings are good enough, to be honest. None of those innings are good enough. And again, Zach Crawley, when's the first test? How many more weeks?
Early June. I'll be there, actually, for
So there's ages till the first test, right? So Zach Crawley has a real chance to score a few runs. And same with Don Bess, has a chance to take wickets. Same with everyone, really. Realistically, the team isn't picked yet. So everyone, but the likes of Crawley especially, has a real chance to score runs and really make sure he's in that side. It could, of course, go the other way. If he doesn't get many runs, then what's to say England don't pick him? You know, these guys really need to kind of make sure of their England place. So, yeah, I say you're probably looking at those three to step up. You're not really looking at the likes of Stevens and Milnes, as you say, to kind of get them the runs. Even Milnes in the second innings scored 26 runs. You know, he got a decent amount of their runs, really. Let's be honest. He got a decent amount of their runs. So, basically, they just need to improve their batting and improve their bowling.
Yeah. With Kent, though, we know what they're capable of, so it might just be a case of a stuttering start to the season, mightn't it?
But you can be capable of anything, and if you don't perform, it doesn't matter.
Fingers crossed Kent can actually find some form as the season progresses. Moving on to the ninth and final game of this week's games, though, we go down to Sophia Gardens in Wales, because Sussex beat Glamorgan by 8 wickets. Now, I suppose we have to start with the Martlets, Joe, because Luke Dunning, funnily enough, our former podcast guest, said that Sussex's ambitions this season were mostly white ball orientated, but he said they were not going to take things lying down in red ball cricket. And they certainly haven't, because they're currently top of Group 3 after the first two games. And this was a brilliant performance. And I suppose one man in particular we have to look at is Ollie Robinson. Absolutely outstanding with a capital O. Took figures of 4 for 50 and 9 for 78. I was gutted when he couldn't get all 10. That would have been absolutely incredible just to round off this week's games. But with Ollie Robinson, first of all, Joe, how impressive of a talent is he? And second of all, you mentioned this summer, we have got a pretty chock-a-block summer with massive series against New Zealand and India, respectively. Of course, the Ashes looming large later this year as well. Do you think that Ollie Robinson can really make a proper push for an England place in 2021?
100%. Firstly, I would just say, Henry Crocombe, why did you have to say that wicket? Because that was very harsh. On Ollie Robinson, who would have got all 10 if you hadn't done that? So, yeah. But back onto Ollie Robinson, I mean, he's a very, very good bowler. He's an exceptional bowler. This game shows it. You know, Glamorgan isn't a place renowned for fast bowling. It's not a place renowned for wickets falling or someone getting 6, 7, 8, 9 wickets in an innings to themselves very quickly, as Robinson did. So, yeah, I think I'm trying to think where he would rank. Again, I've done this a lot today, trying to rank them on a list in my head of where these guys kind of fit. So obviously you've got the likes of Broad, Anderson. I'd say Robinson's Wokes. Up there. Wokes. Although I think Wokes is kind of out of favour at the moment, wrongly in my opinion, but I think he's kind of out of favour with England. So yeah, I mean, Robinson surely has to be up there because he can bat as well. He's not a genuine all-rounder, but he can bat. And if England go to, let's say, Lords, which is actually renowned for producing good seam bowling tracks, if England go to Lords and at the end of the day, put Robinson in the squad, because the worst thing that's going to happen is, assuming there's no bubbles, he gets in his car and drives down to Hove to play for Sussex. So regardless, he's going to be playing cricket, whether that's for England or for Sussex, it doesn't, you know, who knows. But the way I see it is, at some point, you've got, if you're looking at a player to put into a side, whether that's a county side or indeed an international side, for any side this goes for really in the world, at some point, you've got to put them in to take the risk.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, Robinson may look back in 20 years and say, oh, I only played one test. It wasn't for me, which I don't think will be the case, by the way. But, you know, that could happen. But, you know, we could be looking back 50 tests into his career saying, wow, that was a great decision by England. He's taken 150, 200 wickets, however many. So, yeah, I think at some point England have got to give him a chance. You can't, there's only so long he can take wickets for without them noticing.
Although
it kind of reminds me a little bit of Jamie Porter not getting in the side, who
after kind years of consistency
tailed off now. Yeah. Not tailed off, but he's not taking as many wickets. Yeah, Chris Rushworth's another one. Years of consistency, never got a look in, and he's not tailed off. But Jamie Porter has stopped kind of taking wickets now. Hopefully that doesn't happen to Robinson as well, because he's a great bowler.
Absolutely. He's a fantastic talent. And I think his extra pace and bounce due to his height really does make him stand out in that Sussex team. And just in terms of other Martlet's top performers this round, Aaron Thomason, of course, someone who I have quite an affinity for, ex-Warwickshire player, really, really good character. To see him at the top of the order in form alongside the likes of Tom Haynes, Dion Van Zyl as well, is brilliant to see. It's really, really good to see. So fair play to Tomo. He's had a very, very good start to the season, opening the batting for the Martlets. And of course, Dion Van Zyl, I've just alluded to him there, had a fantastic first innings knock of 113 from 153 deliveries. So fair play to Dion as well. Very, very good with the bat in this particular round. In terms of Glamorgan then, Joe, I suppose there's one person that we can really, really focus in on, and that is Kieran Carlson. Now, he's a very, very exciting talent. I like Kieran a lot. I like the way in which he goes about his batting. He's very fluent. He's got a very nice batting technique as well, it has to be said. And he was just sensational this week, wasn't he? Scoring 127 and 132. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant innings from Kieran Carlson. Really steadied the ship for Glamorgan. And Joe, this is a difficult question, but if he has a good season, and this is really, really a stretch at the moment, of course, we are only two games in, do you think that he could be knocking the draw of England alongside the likes of Max Holden, alongside the likes of Lammerby if he finds some form? Do you ever see Kieran Carlson really exploding onto the international stage at some point? Yes or no?
Yeah, I think he's got to be in that kind of bracket. He's 23 pretty soon, Kieran Carlson. So, you know, he's still a young player. He's got years left. He's got years till he reaches his peak of his kind of batting game. So I think he's potentially one man on that kind of list. Just look, the England setup will change in the next 4 or 5 years. That's just how it goes. That's cricket. People will retire. People will come into the side. So, you know, the selectors can't really have him in mind for the next 5 years because they might not even be the selectors in 5 years. You know, Silverwood might not be the coach in the next 5 years. Look, the way I see it, Carlson is a very, very good player. For now, all he can keep doing is keep scoring runs for Glamorgan. And Glamorgan seems to be a great club to go to if you want to suddenly burst onto the international scene and score lots of runs. That seems to be the club to do that seems to be Glamorgan. Look at Marnus. His whole career, his whole life has changed for that tiny little spell he had at Glamorgan. And I'm not saying Carlson can reach those heights necessarily, but anything is possible at the end of the day.
Exactly. Who knows? And of course, fingers crossed that Kieran does continue this good start to the season. In terms of Glamorgan performers, David Lloyd, of course, a former podcast guest here, scored 84 from 99 balls, which included some sumptuous cover drives and straight dives back down the ground. And then finally, Michael Hogan, impressive with the ball, taking 4 for 46. So, Joe, I think that pretty much wraps up today's show. Just before we do end, though, okay, it's been a bit of a mammoth show. Which game are you looking forward to this week? Except for Lancs, of course, because I'll say Warwickshire versus Essex. But what do you say is a neutral game that we should be looking out for?
Well, week? I was actually going to say the Lancs game is going to be very good anyway, because we're waiting for Kent to peak. Lancs have not peaked yet as well. So I was going to say the Lancs game was actually the one to watch. Aside from that, I mean, there's some good games. Hampshire-Gloucester is going to be a great game.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a very good game. And I would also say Notts Worcester, because every game Notts play, I feel like is going to be a good one, because they're obviously, as we talked about, waiting for that win. It'll be interesting to see if any of their team kind of changes, if we see any. Hamid's the vice captain, by the way, in Red Bull cricket, so it'll be interesting to see if he gets given the role for a game. But yeah, look, that's going to be a great game. I would say that the Gloucester Hampshire game, but mainly the Lancs game. Just watch that.
I agree about Gloucestershire versus Hampshire. I think that's going to be a great game. And of course, a London derby between Middlesex versus Surrey. So we have got some pretty good games this week. Should be an exciting round three of the 2021 County Championship. But Joe, I think we've pretty much covered everything this week, haven't we? Pretty in depth. So it's a pretty good way to end today's show. So of course, for all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in to this week's weekly roundup of the 2021 County Championship. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.